Hi, welcome to the Reset Mindset Podcast. RESET stands for Responsible Enterprises for Social and Environmental Transformation. We aim to inspire change and to help professionals learn about high-impact innovative collaboration to build a sustainable future. We share stories of companies who have innovative business models through the lens of sustainability. At RESET, we believe that everyone has a responsibility to innovate for a better future, and our aim is to inspire people to be a champion in their organization or start something new. For more information, visit our website at www.resetmindset.org, and please follow us on your favorite podcast platform and share this with your friends. Welcome back to the Reset Mindset Podcast. Today, we're speaking with the founder of Urchinomics, Brian Tsuyoshi Takeda and Yoshi Tabuchi, founder of Zebra & Company in Japan. Urchinomics' mission is to restore ocean habitats to feed the world. Brian was born in Japan, raised in Canada, studied in Chile, and now lives in Norway. He works out of the company offices in the Netherlands, and he brings unique insights into cultures, peoples, and opportunities to do good. He's a consummate entrepreneur, co-founded Moosey Tea, helping to introduce matcha green tea to North America, promoted Nordic specialty seafoods to East Asian markets at Norway Pelagic, as well as having been the director of innovation at Catston, where Urchinomics was born. With proper incentives, clear ethical boundaries, and the right amount of human ingenuity, he believes restoring coastal ecosystems and creating meaningful jobs can be done responsibly, profitably, and have a sustained positive effect on climate change through blue carbon sequestration. Yoshi, also a global citizen, born in Japan, worked and studied in the United States, Europe, Africa, and Southeast Asia. He's the co-founder of Zebra's & Company, an impact investment firm that pursues supporting zebra companies by way of investment and management support. With a decade of experience in impact investing, he also co-founded Tokyo Zebra Unite, a network organization, a community for zebra companies and supporters in the ecosystem. I'm Vic Wu. I teach entrepreneurship at Stanford University. Born in Hong Kong, studied, worked, and lived in Asia, Africa, and Europe, and now speaking with you in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Hello, Brian. Hello, Yoshi. How's it going today?
Very good. Very good.
Very good. Awesome. Hi, thanks, Vic.
Where are you calling from today?
I'm calling in from a little island in Western Norway.
I'm calling from Tokyo, Japan.
Excellent. This is definitely a global call. So let me kick off today's podcast with asking Brian to share with our listeners, what is Urchinomics, its mission, and what inspired you to start the company?
Of course. So yes, what is Urchinomics? Well, Urchinomics is a marine ecosystem restoration company. More specifically, what we do is we remove the overgrazing and destructive sea urchins that are collapsing kelp forests around the world. We take them out of the water, we ranch them in our land-based aquaculture systems, and we convert them into premium seafood, or uni, in a matter of 6 to 12 weeks. The idea is that by removing the number of urchins in the ocean floor, we allow the kelp forests an opportunity to recover. So as we produce a premium seafood product, we're also restoring the marine ecosystems. The original idea of Urchinomics actually was inspired after the 2011 tsunami in eastern Japan. We learned from the fishers that recovering from that tsunami was made all the more difficult because urchin populations exploded in northeastern Japan, destroying the foundational ecosystem of kelp that supported the wider fisheries. And it was all because these urchins kept on reproducing and eating up all the kelp and turning it into a barren. So we thought, okay, can we use some of our tech that we have, turn those empty destructive urchins into commercial product while removing them so the kelp comes back? And then that's kind of what we were able to do.
Fabulous. It sounds to be a pretty high-tech type of business. How did you come about it? What is your role in the company? And how did you have it sounds to be there's a lot of research that's behind all that you're doing with Urchinomics. Share with us, what is the journey that took you from perhaps another experience to starting this company?
Sure. So I think what we can do is we can start off by looking at our entire development. after realizing that we could use existing Norwegian aquaculture technology to potentially restore marine ecosystems in Japan, that's when we really dove deeply into the world of R&D. Long story short, we inherited 25, 30 years worth of Norwegian state research around feed technologies that was specific for urchins. And what we did was we essentially married that technology to the ecological crisis that they were facing in eastern Japan. Once we figured out the technology could potentially work, that's when we then further refined it by collaborating with a company called Nosan, which is a 100% subsidiary owned by Mitsubishi Corporation. We essentially polished this feed technology about 17 different times over 3 years and finally got it right. We then married that with land-based aquaculture technology that we have in Norway and Denmark and combined it with the biological understanding of sea urchins. Long story short, we have feed, aquaculture, and biology competence merged together that allows us to convert an ecologically destructive pest into one of the world's most premium seafoods in about 6 to 12 weeks.
Well, that sounds to be quite a profitable business, as I am a big fan of uni myself.
As if you're from Hong Kong or Singapore or Japan, yes, I could totally understand. It's the best paying markets for sea urchin roe in the world.
No doubt, no doubt. What in your past experience had helped you with all the research and development that was necessary to start this company?
Let me try to think about that for a second. If I were to cook the essence of that question, are we talking about my previous experience in crossing cultures, or is that the angle you were thinking?
Well, any previous experience that had put you serendipitously into a place where you got the support to do this project, because as you know, it's a pretty specialty project that you are starting or operating. And it seems to me that perhaps there may be some secret ingredient or success formula that you can share with us, with our listeners, as to perhaps how you got to be where you are.
Ah, okay. So this is a little bit more philosophical. I'll try to answer precisely as I can. I genuinely believe that timing and serendipity plays a very significant role in many opportunities that come to fruition. It would be silly and I would say arrogant of me to think that our development could be planned out in advance in a business plan and submitted and get bank financing to fund it. This was really a combination of like-minded individuals, interests, momentum, timing, circumstances, all kind of coming together at the right time. Of course, you know, I think probably the biggest component there is that we were very lucky early on in getting like-minded, mission-aligned investors on board from day one. Our founding investors from the Netherlands essentially gave me a blank check and said, look, you know, what you're proposing sounds really crazy. It's either truth and exciting or it's full of shit, but we can't quite tell yet. So here's a blank check and you figure it out. And essentially, they allowed me to continue and make mistakes, fail and improve, compromising on the values of what we wanted to do. And I think that really gave us that extra platform that most other entrepreneurs would never have. And you combine that with essentially a blessing where the state essentially bequeaths you 25, 30 years of feed research. I mean, yeah, that gives us a pretty significant advantage over everyone else. My cultural connection with Japan and being able to speak and work in Japan, I think also helped, because urchins, the urchin market is a very opaque and very controlled industry. There's a handful of players that manage the entire supply chain. So to be able to essentially collaborate with them and get right into the market, as opposed to going through five or six different intermediaries, also, of course, changed the trajectory as well. So yes, there's a few things that I brought to the table, but I think most of it was just really good luck and having a lot of good people around me.
Well, that sounds to be very interesting how you got there. Now, I want to focus a little bit on the actual business part of Urchinomics. What is the size of the current market? How big do you think you can scale in the next 5 to 10 years?
Sure. So the urchin market, at least if you use the FAO statistics, is estimated to be around 70,000 tons globally. At its peak was about 105,000 tons, but because of overfishing, it's essentially gradually coming down to the 70,000 ton level. But here's the thing that's interesting about urchins. Nearly 100% of all of that catch is wild caught. Now, what is the real kicker here is that when a wild caught dominated industry especially in high-end seafood. When aquaculture starts to be introduced, the market typically absorbs everything that it could produce, because usually wild caught is very limited in supply. So when you look at oysters or abalone, essentially once aquaculture becomes a real supply source, aquaculture outstrips the wild catch market by 10 to 1 or 20 to 1. So with urchins, if wild caught today is 70,000 tons, and if we use the same ratios as other premium aquaculture or premium seafood products, then could the market for urchins be, what, 1 to 1 would be 70,000 tons, right? 10 to 1 would be 700,000 tons. Can it be that size? Well, just look at oysters. Oysters went from 200,000 tons to 5 million tons and growing. And it's still growing. So it's one of those things where it's really hard to say, because we don't have the counterfactual where we have an unlimited amount of urchins in the world and we can see where the market settles. But my suspicion is that even a 1 to 1 would be a huge amount of volume that we need to produce. And frankly, given the way that urchin prices have been developing in the last 8 years, 9 years, every year breaking records, right? And in 2021, increasing prices between 40 to 70% over last year. And last year was already a record. Yeah, and last year was already a record-breaking year. It's just compounding. And just, I guess that's just the love of uni from all around the world.
Well, it sounds to me as a pretty profitable business.
It's looking good. our sales figures that we've achieved are pretty much, if not on target, substantially higher than our budgets. So that's quite exciting.
Excellent. Walk me through the various pieces that would make Urchinomics competitive and scalable to serve the ever-growing market that you're addressing.
Right. So the basics is really numbers. So if you look at the ocean today, for every one perfect urchin that you catch to process into uni that we know today, there's probably between 99 to 999 empty urchins all around that perfect urchin. So the whole industry is based on trying to pick the best. It's like finding the diamond in the rough. But what we're saying is that we could turn urchins out of the rough. The availability of empty urchins is quite astounding. So it's really a matter of numbers there. The other thing is that urchins are typically only available within a very limited season throughout the year. So maybe about 2 or 3 months where they're really, really good. And then before and after that, it's not as good. Through ranching, we can essentially produce a consistent quality product year round and make it available, much like typical aquaculture. And I think that's really one of the bigger factors. Restaurants have a hard time putting uni on the menu because the price fluctuates so much. The availability is limited. You have a bad weather storm and suddenly supply is gone. What we're saying is, look, we'll ranch it, we'll have it in-house, which means that we export or sell a very specific amount each week consistently at a consistent price and provide stability in a market that never had stability as a function. And in the food trade, especially in the restaurant trade, right? You print a menu, you advertise to your customers that you're going to have this product. The worst thing you could do is be sold out or never get it in the first place. Here, we can ensure that consistency.
Excellent. How do you find opportunities around the world? Are you planning to only have, I guess, the ranch in certain locations, or are you looking at the expansion of global facilities to be able to do something similar around the world? As you say, the demand is from around the world.
Yep. So absolutely. We've always been positioning ourselves as a global company. During our R&D phases, when we were perfecting our technologies, we didn't just perfect it in Japan. We then did the validation tests throughout the world to make sure that our technologies were in fact global. Frankly, the urchin barren problem is a global problem as well. So we want to be operating everywhere to restore kelp forests around the world. We want to have urchin consumption to be done locally so that we don't burn massive fossil fuels to fly them from one market to the other. So yes, absolutely.
That was my concern.
Yep. Right now, I mean, right, like 85% of all the premium uni is flown to Japan and then flown back out to core markets. And so the CO2 footprint on uni is actually atrocious. So by producing locally, consuming locally, right, we satisfy the demand. We also restore ecosystems. And our plan is to continue expanding. And even in areas where it may not make economic sense for us to do it ourselves, we're comfortable with partnering with other nonprofits and other organizations through our Urchinomics Impact Program, where we effectively deploy all of our tech and allow our nonprofits to do the same restoration work, provided that they take the profits and put it back into the restoration effort again. then we're okay with sharing our tech and our love.
Great. Well, on the tail end of that, you speak a little bit about this kelp forest restoration on a very broader perspective. What is the ergonomics impact on the environment? Tell us about the kelp forest and how that works, because I'm sure our listeners probably have very little information on that, as is something probably nuanced.
Right. And because it's also underwater, so it's out of sight, out of mind. But kelp forests are effectively one of the most important ecosystems we have on the planet. If you were to compare the ecosystem services, or essentially the benefit that we as society get for having kelp forest, then the number is approximately 30 times that of a tropical forest and about 50 times that of a boreal forest. That is how critically important kelp forests are to our society and nature. But these kelp forests, they are struggling to survive, because when we overfish predatory species like lobsters, crab, and other, you know, yummy, delectable creatures, we upset the balance. And essentially, there's not enough predatory pressure on the sea urchins, and the sea urchins reproduce and reproduce and reproduce. And at one point in time, they will tip the ecosystem from a kelp state into a barren state where the urchins just eat too much kelp and there's nothing left. The problem, though, is that urchins don't die. Right? They can manage to survive in desert-like barren states for decades or centuries. So once they collapse a kelp forest, it stays dead for a long, long time. So what we do at Urchinomics is we only target those ecologically destructive urchins. Those urchins that are in equilibrium with nature, we leave them alone. They're great. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a role, right? Like, we're not vilifying urchins. We're just saying too many of them in a certain area is not good. So Northern California, good example. Southern California, good example.
Yes.
It's obliterated. So, but what we do know is that once you remove the right number of urchins, kelp grows incredibly fast. And so long as the growth speed of the kelp is faster than the speed in which the urchins can eat them, the kelp forest recovers. What we're doing is we are putting an economic incentive into the market. We're telling fishers, hey, look, take these empty destructive urchins out of the water. Nobody else has any value for them, but we can turn them into value. So catch them and get them out of the water so that the kelp forests come back. That's essentially the impact that we have. We are essentially an economic engine that funds restoration through the procurement of empty destructive urchins.
So you're telling me that there is a positive externality to your business, which is really restoration of kelp forests. Is that correct?
That's exactly it. So urchin ranching, the financial model behind Urchinomics is the idea of just taking empty urchins and turning them into super premium uni and selling them for great prices. So our economics are more than functional with that. The externality that we create, and it's been purposely designed, is that positive externality that the more we generate revenues and the more we profit, the better the environment becomes, because we are specifically and targeting and removing the ecologically destructive empty urchins. I think in the 20th century and in the 21st century, when we talk about externalities of companies, it's typically negative, right? It's usually
negative.
Pollution,
yeah.
Noise, exploitation of labor. It's always something really bad. But Urchinomics has an opportunity to prove that we can have positive externalities through capitalism. And that is really my mission as a finance and strategy guy from Queen's University in Canada. I wanted to leverage the power of capitalism and markets in a way that can do net good. So that's really the whole idea behind Urchinomics, is we're hardwiring good behavior. Because if we don't, we humans have a tendency to slip down that slippery slope and do bad things. So
we
if
have
it's
seen
physically,
that.
Right? So if we're physically wired, hardwired to do that, right? And we set clear ethical bounds and rules within our organization, then we only do projects that are restorative. That's it.
Well, more companies should actually think about what are positive externalities that can come from doing their business. That would be quite an innovation in the way we think about strategy. Well, next, I would love to invite Yoshi to ask Brian maybe a couple of questions. Yoshi?
Sure. Yep. Well, thanks, Vic.
Can you give us, our listeners, just a quick overview, what is a zebra, so that our listeners who are not familiar with the concept of zebra will get to know it a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So zebra is a concept that was born about 5 years ago in 2016 in the West Coast of the US. It's basically a concept that depicts the companies, the pursuit of social impact. And, you know, that also pursue maybe a different growth profile or maybe different purpose from the typical unicorns or the venture capital world. So we call these companies zebra companies. And yeah, so that's the zebra companies.
So it's an identity venture profile with certain traits and characteristics that would qualify as a zebra company. Okay, great. I just want to clarify that because probably many listeners don't know what zebra is and the movement that is really sweeping across the world today.
Yeah, my question would be, so if you remember, Brian, when I started Tokyo Zebras Unite a couple of years ago, you reacted to my post on LinkedIn right away, actually. I remember that.
Yep.
And then we've been, my current company, Zebra & Company, also as well as Tokyo Zebras Unite, have been in the partnership with their Archer Mix since then. So my question would be, what made you think that, you know, Archer Mix is a zebra?
I really connected with the concept of the zebra precisely as your group describes it. I mean, we're talking about a real living, breathing animal. Like it exists. We're not talking about unicorns or pegasuses or whatever all the cool names that the investment community likes to label mythical creatures that do mythical numbers on the stock market, but you know may or may not do anything practical on the planet. So in that sense, if we are going to be compared to some four-legged animal, I would rather be associated with a very real animal that exists. And I just love the idea that many zebras are called a dazzle. That's just awesome.
Interesting. So you mentioned the real, right? The zebras sound real compared to unicorns or whatever other animals. What does that really mean when it comes to the business or when it comes to the real world? What does real mean for you?
Right. So I guess to me, I think when I think of real, I think of physical things happening. So there's been a tremendous amount of value created through the digital revolution, right? Information and all that kind of stuff. It's been a blessing to live in a time when IT information, AI, and all that kind of stuff can help us live our lives. But in our atomic world where carbon is being spewed out, where physical things are changing, things have to happen. Like physical things have to happen. Talking about or financing this or that in terms of getting, you know, carbon funded or all of that talk and the finance behind it is great. But we still have to see those trees planting. We still have to see the kelp forest growing. And something physical has to happen. For Urchinomics, we are one of the few companies that I know of that could profitably, physically restore marine ecosystems. Land-based ecosystems are hard enough to fund and restore and physically do, right? You plant trees, you got to get water, nutrients, you got to, you know, keep the developers away, you got to keep urban development. Like that's already hard enough. Try doing all that underwater, right? It's very hard, but the rewards are huge if we can do it. And so because Urchinomics has the ability to actually incentivize restoration through markets and through our technology, I tend to see that as real because those kelp forests that come back, they come back in 3 to 6 months. This isn't a 30-year restoration project that may or may not work. This will physically grow in front of your eyes, right? Up to 2 feet a day, you know, depending on the kelp species we're talking about. That's very real. So that's my connection. It's not about massive valuations on a stock market. It is about getting real things done happening. And yes, that's where I definitely associate better with a zebra.
Well, thanks.
If I could add one more comment about the zebras, the other point that I also connect with the concept of zebra is the whole idea of taking a company public. So there's a lot of talk and glorification of taking companies public and, you know, making people rich overnight, at least on paper. But I don't find that as a goal in and of itself anything of meaning. And so with Urchinomics, we have no real reason or interest to take the company public. Yes, I understand it creates liquidity and allows people to, you know, sell out their stock options and stuff. I get that. But like the goal of going out to the public markets and raise money and you know and IPO like that shouldn't be the end. That's just a means to achieve something else, right? And I don't know. I think there's too much glorification of that, and I think the unicorn world, you know, really makes that something an exciting, sexy objective, and I couldn't care less about that.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. So like you said, the meaning or purpose, I think it's very important for the companies. Even if you're a unicorn, it's probably a very important element. My last question for you would be, so in the long term, what is your goal or what is your like state to be for your company? If it's not an IPO, if it's not in a liquidity, these events, what is the your vision in the long term?
Our goal is to be a massive contributor to coastal ecosystem restoration while providing reasonable returns to my investors. So, you know, am I going to work myself and my team really, really extra hard so that we can generate that extra 2 or 3% IRR? No, right? We're going to focus on the mission. We're going to do what we can, try to find that right balance for my team. And yes, of course, achieve profits, because without profits, I can't really call that sustainable. But, you know, reasonable profits is what we're looking for. And whatever surplus that we have beyond the inherent restoration that we do, I would rather see our company continually investing in better ways to ranch, better ways to restore ecosystems, lobby regulatory bodies like governments to rethink their fisheries policies so that restored ecosystems, you know, don't get overfished again, for example. I see Urchinomics living on for a long time. Maybe I'm at the head of it. Maybe there's more competent people that take over, whatever. But I think the idea of having a restorative venture where profitability and restoration are hardwired, those are the type of ventures that I want to be affiliated with. And whether it's Urchinomics or maybe there's another one that comes in the pipeline, who knows? But so far, this is in my career, this is the one that seems to have the best chance at proving it. So I'm really going to work hard with my team and my investors to show that capitalism and restoration can work hand in hand.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Understood. Great. Should I ask the final question of the segment today? So what is one question I should have asked, but didn't? So please state your question and answer it.
How about this one? I want to guide the answer to rethink the idea of sustainability. I think the question would be something like, what are your thoughts on sustainable fisheries or sustainable food production? And my response to some version of that question would be something like, sustainability is good. It's important that we are sustainable, of course, but we have dug such a deep hole for ourselves since the Industrial Revolution, that sustainability isn't good enough. All that sustainability is doing is that it's still, especially in fisheries, sustainable fisheries is still an extractive fisheries. It's just that we're doing it in a less bad way. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is we need to think of other ways to be restorative, right? Where we can get ourselves out of the hole that we've already dug for ourselves. When you look at the trends with population continuing to grow and us only just starting to get sustainable fisheries and sustainable seafood going, the curves don't ever match. The consumption keeps on going up and supply keeps on going down. When it comes to food security and everything else, we got to think of a different way. I think what we need to do is, as consumers, we need to start demanding not just sustainable, but restorative. Let's find ways where our food system, our ecosystem can actually be restored with the purchasing decisions that we make as individual consumers. When you're at a sushi restaurant or something, should you take the high trophic, super energy demanding, aquaculture predatory fish that's at the top of the food chain? Or should we be looking at sea urchin roe, which is pretty much just above kelp at the very bottom of the food chain, right? It's quite simple things, but if you have a choice between a low impact, ecologically restorative product, kind of like ours, right? Or farm kelp or scallops or like things that have a very low impact on the environment or actually can restore environments. Those are the decisions, or those are the things that I think I would like consumers to to spend a bit more time thinking about, because it's hidden. We don't really think about the cost of these things. But yes, when you eat very high on the food chain, that is very energy intensive. And if you eat low on the food chain, it's much lower.
Excellent.
So I think that would have been, I don't know how you would format that.
Yes. Well, it sounds to me that is sustainability is the language of sustainability in terms of what we consume is good enough. If we were to somehow replace and have a new trajectory of understanding how, where our food is really coming from, and can we ask for something that's beyond survival level, getting ourselves out of the hole and into restorative and returning nature the way it's intended to be. And your idea of having consumers actually demand that is probably a new era in sustainability, so to speak, without using the word sustainability.
I think you're right. I think the current trajectory of sustainability would be okay if we were in the 17 or 1800s. Much lower population. We don't have massive fishing technologies. Like at that level, sustainability probably would have been fine. But we have, extracted
way
so
beyond.
Much, way beyond what the planet is able to handle. And we're only getting better at that. The last few years is probably exponentially more disastrous than the last 100. Given that trajectory, I just don't feel sustainability is good enough. And that's why I hope that Urchinomics can be one of many future solutions that helps set the tone of what restorative seafood and restorative aquaculture should be, so that we all can, live and have a good life and not see our planet burn to a crisp.
Yes, literally burn to a crisp.
Yeah, literally.
Fires right behind me.
Right, exactly.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for inspiration stories. And thank you so much, Brian, for joining us from Norway, and Yoshi for joining us from Tokyo. This has been a wonderful conversation to learn so much about. It's such a variety of topics, from kelp forests to positive externalities. What is a zebra actually? And what is that community intended to support in pursuit of management, impact investing, and other support for companies like yours? So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Reset Mindset podcast, at the intersection of sustainability and innovation. If you like what we're doing, please follow us on your favorite podcast platform or subscribe. Also, we're always looking for input, so please let us know what you think, who else we should invite to our show, and really anything else you want to share with us. Drop us a line at askreset mindset@gmail.com.